four things that evangelists do. This was a topic that was given by request. It was based on a conversation I was having over here, and the lady said she'd like to hear more about that. So we were talking about 54 things that evangelists do from 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus. If you want one of those sheets, they're front and back this time. So you can all have one, or if you have yours from before. There are plenty of copies for everybody that's here. But previously I gave you two sheets, and this one is on front and back. So should be the same material as before, yes. Because we didn't get as far as we thought we might, and what I was doing was just having you look down through those sheets and see if there was anything on there that you wanted to discuss or ask a question about. Obviously, we don't have time to talk about it all. But we didn't feel like we got very far, so I asked if you would be interested in doing that again. And David Landis said yes, for one. But every time we turn around, we have to mention that he's not here today. So, David, this is for you. And if you don't have anything you want to ask or say about it, that's fine, too. But I wanted you to have that opportunity. We talked about it a little last time, but don't be afraid of bringing up the same thing, or if you weren't here with us and you want to ask about something on here, feel free. Everybody got a sheet or two now? Anybody want to talk about anything that's on that sheet? And remember, if you just got one, it's on the front and the back.
Chapter 4:10 doesn't look like that's unique to evangelists.
I agree with that. That ought to be an injunction for all people who are considered younger. In Timothy's day, if you were under the age of 46, that was considered young, apparently. So that's a pretty wide range there. But anybody who's in the younger age category in the church ought to live by that. Let no man despise thy youth. It was especially important for an evangelist because an evangelist was to be an example to the believers. The word evangelist is mentioned three times in the New Testament. It's mentioned, first of all, in the book of Acts, where Philip is referred to as an evangelist. It's mentioned in the book of Ephesians, chapter 4. The church is built on the statement is made there that when he ascended up on high, he led captivity captive, and he gave gifts unto men. And the gifts he gave were, he gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, and some to be teaching pastors, the elders. So the church was given these gifts to instruct the church and help the church to grow up and everybody to be what they should be. It's also used in 2 Timothy 4. Timothy's told to do the work of an evangelist. Paul.
I want to remind us again, chapter 6, number 27, withdraw thyself from certain ones.
Withdraw thyself from certain ones. Timothy had been left in a very, very precarious situation at Ephesus. There were people from within the congregation who, and some of these may have been in the eldership, who were causing a great deal of turmoil because they were teaching things that the apostles had not taught for the church. And Timothy was told that under certain circumstances he was to withdraw himself from certain people. This is still something that the church needs to do today. There are times when we need to withdraw our fellowship from various individuals who are teaching falseness. He was told in the first chapter, charge some that they teach no other doctrine, neither give heed to fables or endless genealogies which minister questions rather than godly edifying which is in faith. So do. He's told to avoid profane and vain babblings, oppositions of science, falsely so-called. The people who were teaching these things and who were insistent on teaching these things for the church were eventually to be withdrawn from as a final solution to the problem. And they would no longer be regarded as a part of the church. Some of these people are even named in the letters to Timothy. Hymenaeus, Philetus, Alexander, individuals that we don't know very much about, but they were teaching something other than the apostles' doctrine. We find in the second chapter of Acts that the church continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine. That tells us two things. It tells us that there was such a thing as the apostles' doctrine, that we're not free to just believe and teach anything we decide to, anything that seems good to us, anything that appeases our feelings. There is a solid body of information known as the apostles' doctrine, and the second thing it tells us is that it was continued steadfastly in. If we want to be the New Testament church, we continue steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine. If somebody is trying to teach something other than that, they have to be dealt with. They're dealt with privately, and then, if necessary, they're dealt with publicly. In extreme cases, the fellowship of the church needs to be withdrawn from them. And I'm glad you ask about that, because these things need to be taught in the church at times like this, when we have a good spirit within the congregation, when we're all on the same page doctrinally, so that if somebody does come along in the church or somebody changes among us and they're trying to teach things that are not according to the apostles' doctrine, then we understand what we have to do. And it's not a personal thing. We're not just teaching about it because of what a certain individual is doing, but we already have this well under our belt. We know what to do in circumstances where we need to withdraw ourselves, and that makes it easier for us to do those difficult things when the time comes. Timothy had a tough job there. He was not as young as some, but he was younger than enough people that they could have looked down on him for his youth. And so he's told, behave yourself in such a way that people will not tend to look down on you because you're relatively young. And do the hard things. Face these things head on. If there's somebody you need to withdraw fellowship from, then go ahead and do that, because it doesn't get any easier. You can't sweep problems under the rug and expect to keep doing that. They don't go away. They don't get smaller. They have to be faced. Sometimes when we face them, they do evaporate. Other times when we face them, we face very difficult choices. But we come out the other end. It's kind of like those three temptations this morning. You face it down. You come out the other end having survived that. And then you can have a better time for a while, maybe. Any congregation that exists for a certain period of time is going to experience trouble. And it's the way we respond to those times of trouble that helps us to understand what we're really made of, and how serious we take the Lord's way and will. So those are unpleasant things, but they are to be done. And if we don't do those things, then those who teach things other than the apostles' doctrine will simply take the church along with them, and it just blends into a part of the big, sick denominational world that's all around us, and there's nothing any longer about it that designates it as the Lord's church at all. And if you've lived as long as I have, you've seen that happen numerous times. Congregations that serve the Lord, and then somebody came along teaching something else, and they didn't get withdrawn from, and they took the whole congregation away, or half of it away, until they're doing who knows what. Well, when that happens, then it's time for people to come out from among them and be separate, and touch not the unclean thing, and try to restore again what we find for the church in the Bible. So that restoration is really a constant process. It's not something that was done by the Campbells and now we don't have to do it anymore. Every new generation in the church has to look at the Bible and do their best to be the church that we read about in the Bible, leaving behind some traditions like we were talking about in Paul's class this morning. We need to compare what we are and what we do with the Bible thoroughly and all the time. Do you want to say anything about that, Paul?
No, I just thought we need to be reminded about those things.
Those are hard things, and the best way is just to face it down when the time comes, do what needs to be done, speak the truth in love, and keep the Lord's people together in His truth as best we can. There's always a tendency to ignore things, turn our face the other way, bury our heads in the sand, sweep things under the rug, and hope that it gets better. Well, maybe it will, but not likely. It has to be confronted. There are certain people, some of this comes down to personalities. There are certain personalities that just have to be faced down. And if you're non-confrontational, and I hope you are non-confrontational, God's people in general should be non-confrontational type of people. Some of us will walk 10 miles to get around having a confrontation. If you're like that by nature, and I sort of hope you are, then you may have to push yourself to confront somebody who has a personality that is going to sweep everything along with them if they can. There are people like an Adolf Hitler. There was only one way to stop Adolf Hitler, and that was with force. He wasn't going to stop until he was dead. There was only one way to stop Napoleon, and that was with force. People like that do not stop. He already had plans to rule the country that you and I are living in now. In fact, he used to own this very land that we're on, and he had plans for which ones of his brothers and sisters were going to be in charge of this area right here where we are now. The only reason that didn't happen is because he sold it to Jefferson because he saw that he was going to lose it anyway. There are some people like that. So that's the type of thing that Paul is dealing with. Timothy tended to be a rather timid younger man who didn't like confrontation. There's a lot of good about that. But he needed to man up and do the things that needed to be done in the face of people with stronger personalities than he had. And that's often an issue, especially for younger people who haven't faced that type of thing before. You live long enough, you come to know that, hey, this is a situation that needs to be faced head on. People have to understand how far they can go and what line they will not be able to cross and what's going to happen if they do cross that line. It works out better for everybody that way if we just make those things clear. It's kind of like learning to be a parent. I remember learning to be a parent. It took a little bit to figure out just sort of how to do that. Once you learn how to do it, you don't have any trouble saying no and meaning it, and your kids know what happens if they disobey you. So I think learning to be an evangelist or learning to be an elder is probably similar to that. You're dealing with children, albeit God's children. But some of God's children will push you until you make them stop. It's just the way it is. It's nothing against people. It's just the way people are. Okay, anybody else have anything they want to talk about on front or back or page one or page two? It has become... Okay, go ahead, Paul. I didn't see any other hands, so go ahead.
I was looking at chapter 2, verse 2, number 36, where it says, teach faithful men, who shall be able to teach others.
Yes.
That's kind of putting you on the spot. That, I mean, you have to make some kind of determination. What decisions do you make where there's a faithful man, but you think he's not able to teach?
Well, there are some people who are faithful. The word faithful just means trustworthy. And there are some people who are faithful and will never be able to teach anybody because they don't have any aptitude for teaching. Timothy is especially, and that doesn't mean we don't teach them too. Timothy or any evangelist teaches everybody in the church that he has an opportunity to. But this was a specific thing to pass this down through the generations. And this is one reason that we know that there were supposed to be evangelists on down. You teach faithful men that they may be able to teach others also. As long as the church exists, there will be a need for both evangelists and elders. If somebody is unable to teach, then it's the sooner they know that, the better, so that they can apply themselves in areas where they can function. Like one lady I was reading about not long ago, she wanted to be an opera singer, but her teacher told her, unfortunately, I wish you could, but you can't. You have a voice to be a concert singer, but you'll never be an opera singer because your voice isn't strong enough. Well, no amount of study or preparation was going to give her the stronger voice that she needed, so she needed to hear that bad news so she could live her life accordingly and apply her talents to things that she could do. She left singing entirely and went on to be very successful in a completely different field. But if somebody had led her along and told her, oh, you can be an opera singer, then it never would have worked. So if somebody is not able to teach, they need to understand that. And we don't always know until there's been a certain amount of effort. But there are some people who just can't teach in a public manner, at least. And they just need to know that so they can do other things. On the other hand, if you find people who can, then you need to teach them to that end. Maybe even have some classes for just a certain variety of people so that they can learn in an intensive way to be able to teach others also. Did you have something in mind on that?
I just wondered if you had any markers or is it just a personality thing that you observe?
I think most people can teach, but there are some who just can't do it. Most people, if they know something, they can teach it. But there are some who can't and just need to be told that their talents lie in other areas. And God never expects any of us to do anything that He has not equipped us to do. So we need to give people reality. Oh, sure. We wouldn't know they couldn't do it unless they tried it. Yeah, we definitely let them try it first. But if they try it, they know the material, but they just can't seem to find a way to put it across. And after a certain amount of trying, and that's a judgment call, how much trying you do. But after a certain amount of that, then it sometimes becomes clear that they're just not capable of doing it. And this is true not only in the church, but in any area. I knew a young man, in fact, I had a conversation with him right up where Long John Silver's used to be, right by your office. He and three others of us sat in a booth there, and we had to tell this young man, he wanted to be a public school teacher, we had to tell this young man, I just can't see you in the classroom. The kids would have eaten him alive. I mean, it wouldn't have been pretty. So we didn't want him to even have to experience that. You need to find something that you can do, because this is not something that you're going to be able to do. And he had certain disabilities that would keep him from doing it, but he couldn't see himself. It was Robert Burns that said, oh, would some power the giver give us to see ourselves as others see us? It was obvious to anybody that that young man could not be a public school teacher. Obvious to anybody except himself. Just needed to be told. And he didn't like it, but at least he got told. It's up to him whether he accepts it or not. The same thing is true in the church sometimes. Sometimes we can see somebody else's abilities better than they themselves can. We can help steer them into areas where they can succeed and find fulfillment, because those areas will be in accordance with the gifts that God has placed within them. Good questions. Was there another?
We were talking about teaching. I don't know if I'm going to say this right, but I'm going to try it. Verse 12 in chapter 2, First Timothy, verse 11 is about let women learn quietly.
Right.
Verse 12, it says, I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over men.
Right.
How do you explain these people that complain from other religions to say the women are supposedly preachers, pastors, or whatever?
Yeah. Well, we know that this applies to the church today, because Paul does not state this as if it's just a cultural thing that may change in some other century. Instead of that, he takes pains to take this all the way back to the creation. For Adam was first formed, then Eve. He's talking about the natural order of things from the very beginning, and the difference between men and women in God's plan from the very beginning. And 3 weeks ago when I was here, we spent some time talking about that particular area. But just reiterating that, I'd say that if people have women pastors, as you mentioned, that they are violating what the Bible plainly teaches. No woman can qualify to be an elder because she's not the husband of one wife. Or maybe today she thinks she legally is, but that's another perversion thrown into the whole area. So either way, she's not going to qualify to be an elder according to the qualifications that God gave. There's no woman pastor in the Bible. If the Lord had wanted to make a statement about this, the very best way to make that statement would have been to have selected 6 male apostles and 6 female apostles. Instead of that, he selected 12 male apostles and 0 female apostles. What does that tell us? It's not that he didn't like women. It's not that he didn't travel with women or hang around them or take advantage of the things that they had to offer with regard to lots of things that women can do. There were women who traveled with Jesus. The first 3 verses of the 8th chapter of Luke shows us that they not only supported his work, but they traveled with him. It isn't that they weren't good ministers in the cause, but they were not placed in positions of authority within the church in the first century, and they're not supposed to be in positions of authority within the church in the 21st century. Nothing could be clearer than that in the New Testament. And why people want to go against that, I think, is mainly because of fashion, mainly in the name of being broad-minded. But it does not work out well. And I'm glad to be with a group of people who are satisfied with the Lord's plan. Things work better when we just do it God's way. When women are not restricted in their work and thinking by having authority that would weigh upon them, and by having responsibilities that would keep them from doing the things that they can and should be doing. There's great freedom for the women in the church. They don't have to prepare public things for the church. That gives them release, freedom, and peace to do all the things that women do behind the scenes that are a wonderful and integral part of the functioning of God's family. I mean, there are women here who, if you piled up all the food that they've prepared for sick people and taken over to sick people, it would be just mountains of food. Just one woman prepared mountains of food during her lifetime. Well, that's a great and wonderful work. She is released to do that type of thing by not having to have public responsibility and prepare for public workings. So there's a lot to be said for God's plan. Even I can understand why he has done it in the way he's done it. Sometimes I can anyway. Appreciate that, Tom. Did you want to say more about that?
I haven't decided yet.
Okay, well, feel free to come back to it if you want. Bill, I think you had something.
13 and 31.
Number 13. Don't neglect your gift. Now, Timothy had had Paul's hands laid on him and had received one of the supernatural spiritual gifts. And he was supposed to stir that up and keep on exercising it. Today we don't have that, but we do have natural gifts that God has given us, and we need to stir those up, whatever they are, whatever areas these are in. That would be the equivalent of stirring that gift up and not neglecting it. Paul said that Timothy's was in him through the laying on of his hands. But ours are given to us. Our natural gifts are. Everybody has gifts that are a little different from each other. Even though I assume that every evangelist does all of these 54 things during his lifetime, no two evangelists are gifted quite the same way, and some of them will emphasize one thing more than another. So that would be going with your strongest gifts, I think. And then number 31, keep that committed to thy trust, that good thing keep. I just think he's talking about the gospel here. Keep this, keep yourself in the hope of the gospel, keep on keeping on with pointing people back to the basic simplicities of what the New Testament says, and that this is enough, not to be distracted by all the things that really don't matter in the long run. But if you've been doing this a long time, just keep on doing it as long as you can. Keep that thing which is committed to thy trust. He himself, Paul, said, I know whom I have believed and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. Paul had committed something to the Lord. The Lord had committed a trust to him. And it was like a binding tie between them. They both had commitments to one another. Now, Timothy had this trust committed to him as well, to do this particular work and to do it faithfully. This is a lifelong project. It's not so much a job as it's just a life. Being an evangelist is a life, and it takes all your time. It takes all your life. It expands to fill whatever is allotted to it. It's all consuming. Like somebody said about real estate, and Chad Freeman told me this story, and I think I've mentioned this before. Somebody told Chad, they'll try real estate for a while. And Chad said, well, you don't try it. It tries you. And I think that's the way the work of an evangelist is. You don't try it. It tries you. And it does try you. But there is a trust that's committed to you. And you keep after that no matter what. Through thick and thin, no matter how late, no matter how tired, you keep on doing what needs to be done. No matter what interruptions are thrown at you, you keep getting back to the things that need to be done. That's the way I view that. Did you have a thought about either one of those, Bill?
Just reading down through here, there's not a lot of talk about the teaching and the doctrine and to do those things. That's a big part of the work of the evangelist.
It is a big part.
To rightly divide and hold fast
It's becoming popular in some circles and has been for a while in some parts of our country to even deny that evangelists exist. As one man said, well, if we have evangelists today, where are the qualifications for them? So I've got another piece of paper for you, too, as we close. And I am aware of the time because I overheard somebody downstairs who I think had written the Chiefs off earlier in the season. But now they're anxious to watch again because of, so I am aware of the time. Just because I'm giving you another piece of paper doesn't mean I'm not. But you guys can pass this out if you'd like. Just a list of qualifications. And we don't need to discuss these. We don't have time to discuss them. But I was going to pass it out if nobody said anything. Just a list of qualifications that aren't all found in one place. There's not a list of them like there is for elders or for deacons. And yet, we do find them interspersed that an evangelist, before he can be appointed, should be well reported of by the brethren, nourished up in the words of faith and good doctrine, blameless in the same sense that elders and deacons are blameless, vigilant, meek, good behavior, charitable, apt to teach, which not everybody is. He must not be greedy, must be patient, not a brawler, not solving things with his fists, not a person that is going to fly off the handle easily, but a man who's diligent, endures hardships, and is morally pure. Those things, I would say, could stand as a list of qualifications for evangelists when we think about whether or not to appoint somebody. And unfortunately, we don't really have time to discuss them. Thank you guys for passing those out, but you can peruse those at your own leisure, and if you ever want to talk about these things again, we can certainly do that. The Bible is not so big a book, but what we eventually come back around to most subjects again. Eventually. Well, I hope that's been profitable for you. And we're going to conclude this afternoon once again by extending the invitation. If you have anything to bring before the brethren, let us know about that as we stand and sing the invitation number.